Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Rush Limbaugh. I still have a few fans left. Now, as you know, I've been going through a tough time lately. I had to resign my position at ESPN due to some controversial remarks that I made about Philadelphia Eagles quarterback Donovan McNabb. Apparently, he's black. Who knew? And before I check into rehab, I asked the producers of this show if I could read a brief statement. As America knows, I am high. Lee rated among radio broadcasters. The days ahead will be difficult, but I refuse to wallow in self-pity or crawl into bed with a 14-year-old. Bottle of scotch. But a botched back operation has left me in excruciating pain, which my big ass, per in supply, could not stop. Wow, this has given me a headache. Oh, I wish I was on Oxycontin. Hard times then would be forgotten. Look away, look away, look away, Limbaugh fans. The liberal media is out there plotting. Want me in a jail cell rotten. Lock away, lock away, lock away, this great man. Oh, I once said lock drug users away, away. But now you'll find I've changed my mind, and I can't blame Slick Willie. Some say hooray and pray I'll be convicted. What's new? I'm through. You knew I was a dick. Ted.
Thanks for returning to Great Speeches and Interviews on Access Sacramento and The Voice. I'm Steve Lerman. You can listen to this program and many other wonderful programs at 96.5 FM in the Sacramento area. And if you're just joining us, we're listening to The Psychology Behind Morality and Politics. When it comes to moral judgments, Jonathan Haidt says, we think we are scientists discovering the truth, but actually we are lawyers arguing for positions we arrived at by other means.
I know this is the question period, but there's a quote here which is just so relevant. I hope I can read it. It's from an article by Yossi Klein Halevi on Pesach Jews versus Purim Jews. He talks about these two strands among Jews in Israel. Actually, it's more in Israel, but it's here too. So I just love this, and it fits so well with the righteous mind. He says, Jewish history speaks to our generation in the voice of two biblical commands to remember. The first voice commands us to remember that we were strangers in the land of Egypt, and the message of that command is, don't be brutal. The second voice commands us to remember how the tribe of Amalek attacked us without provocation while we were wandering in the desert, and the message of that command is, don't be naive. Passover Jews are motivated by empathy with the oppressed. That's this Care and Compassion Foundation. Purim Jews are motivated by alertness to threat. That's these group binding virtues where you have to have if you're going to be attacked from outside. Both are essential. So anything you can do to convey the sense that, yeah, both sides are right. Both sides are wise to certain threats. Conveying that both sides are right. And linking them to both, you know, both are Jews. So these are, I think, some of the steps that can at least create this greater sense of community and necessary purpose.
There's some place you talked about some work you've done with some of your students that, what did you say, that diversity was like cholesterol, that we need the good kind mm-hmm. and the bad yeah. kind. We need difference. Mm-hmm. And it's okay for all these. I want to find it. You know what? You say it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So,
it's interesting.
Okay. So, you know, I grew up, I started at Yale in 1981, just as diversity was becoming a major, major watchword of the left. And my entire academic career, it's all been about diversity. Diversity this, diversity that. And what's really meant by that is racial diversity, and then secondarily gender diversity. And claims are made for diversity, that it has all these benefits for thinking and does all these great things. But at the same time, what I've observed in my academic career is when I started school in the 80s, there were a few conservatives on the faculty, and now there are almost none. So we've reached a state that George Will described. He said there's a certain kind of liberal that wants diversity in everything except thought. And so we do need certain kinds of diversity. But the key to remember is that diversity, by its very nature, is divisive. And so what's the function of your group? If your group needs cohesion, you don't want diversity. If your group needs good, clear thinking, and you want people to challenge your prejudices, then you need it. So in the academic world, we need that kind of diversity, and we don't have it. That was part of my point.
How does that help you analyze what might be done?
Yeah, so diversity is generally divisive, and it has to be managed. There is some interesting research showing that when you celebrate diversity and point it out, you split people. But if you drown it in a sea of commonality, then it's not a problem. So anything you can do to emphasize how similar we all are, how much we have in common, is good. Anything you do to celebrate, look how different we are, look how diverse we are, that tends to make it harder to have any
except drowning things in commonality can also making everything superficial. Right.
Well, what do you want? Do you want authenticity or do you want peace and harmony?
I don't want to have to choose between the two.
You think you might.
But you cannot drown, you know.
No, when there are policy differences as big as what to do about the Palestinian issue.
Right, you can't drown that in commonality.
That's right. Yeah. But what I'm saying is start by addressing that. Start by building the sense of our community, how much we have in common, how there have always been these two sides, and Jews have to do both. Start by building all of that. You know, and then you can address the harder policy issues.
Okay, can I see a show of hands, questions?
So I actually just wanted to request your working definition of conservative and liberal, because I feel like I've been a little bit working backwards trying to figure out by how you characterize them what you basically mean when you say, for example, that conservatives are discriminated against in the academy. Like, what is the definition of conservative and liberal?
Okay. So at least in the American context, it's become very easy in that it's now an identity. 50, 70 years ago, the Republican Party had, there were liberal Republicans, there were conservative Democrats. So back then, political scientists said, well, Americans don't know what these terms mean. Americans are hopeless. These terms are meaningless. But since the two parties have gotten sorted, once Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act, the South left the Democratic Party, joined the Republican, everything got purified. It's as though these giant electromagnets got turned on in the 60s, and they've been cranking up ever since. And anything that has the vaguest left-right charge gets pulled to one side, everything gets purified. So in the American context, it can mean something as simple as you identify as liberal or conservative. Psychologically, what we find empirically is that people who identify as conservative tend to like order and predictability. They are not attracted to change for the sake of change, whereas people who identify as liberal, they like variety and diversity. I have one study where we have dots moving around on a screen. Conservatives like the images where the dots are moving around more in lockstep with each other. Liberals like it when it's all chaotic and random. Liberals keep their rooms messier than conservatives. So there's our deep psychological differences. We eat different food. We eat at different restaurants. And this is part of the problem now, is that it's become not just an ideological difference. It's a real lifestyle difference.
So I think that gets at part of the confusion that it's probably the simplest thing to associate conservative with Republican and and liberal with Democrat.
But in this country now,
but you're really talking as a social psychologist about conservative and liberal as two ways
traits
of being human.
That's right. There are dimensions. So openness to experience is the main psychological trait that has been found to correlate with the left-right dimension. And so I would guess, I know nothing about the situation in Israel, but I would guess when you go out to dinner in Jerusalem with people on the left versus the right, there will be a lot more sort of fusion restaurants and variety and diversity when you go out with people on the left than with people on the right.
And that has something. It has to do with a lot of things. But it's also related to this echo chamber problem, that it's like what we're hearing, and we're never hearing the whole story or being able to internalize the whole story. So that's why you're here tonight. What do we do about these echo chambers? What does your science teach you?
Oh, boy, what do we do about the echo chambers? That's really hard. I mean, it's especially hard in this country where the First Amendment means that
the government can't. We're all talking to people who are like us, and we're living in neighborhoods, as you said, with people who are like us. And
we've got a lot of sociology working against us here. Part of becoming more modern and wealthy and individualistic is that we make our life choices based on what we like, what appeals to us. So you don't just stay where you were born the way people used to more often. I mean, there's always been a lot of movement among humans. But nowadays, I mean, when you look at people shopping for college or jobs, well, you know, Seattle has a lot of bookstores. I like that. And my grad student, Matt Motel, has done research looking at millions of people when they move. Do they, on average, move to a place that's more conducive to their politics or less? And the answer is more, right, on both sides. So we've started to move into what a phrase that the sociologist Robert Bella called lifestyle enclaves. We pick things based on these, you know, things like bookstores and versus churches and gun ranges, but they end up just getting more and more purified. So that's a real problem. So the echo chamber, because of our residential patterns and because of technology, the echo chamber gets more and more closed off.
And just modernity as a whole. That's so interesting.
Well, it's freedom. The more you are free and have the resources and have a society based on markets and businesses that will cater to what you want, and those are generally good things, well, if people choose where to live and who to associate with, they get ever more segregated.
So progress leads to incivility.
Of a sort. But again, progress leads to peacefulness, nonviolence, but to us being shut off from each other. Yes.
And so you also speak of virtues, which is, I find, a word that's very magnetic to modern people and to younger people. And so, you know, I like to talk about civility grounding virtues as opposed to ground rules.
And I like that.
Right? And I wonder if you think that even that kind of language, I mean, you talk about Ben Franklin's United Party for Virtue, so this has a history with us too. If that might be something, you know, something that can help.
Yeah, I think so. I think we went through, in America at least, we went through a period in the 60s and 70s when the education establishment became extremely liberal, and part of that is a flirtation with relativism and a resistance. It's horrible to think of adults telling kids what's right and wrong. What a terrible thing. That's oppression. Yeah. And so we created these sort of value-free spaces, which conveys a value, which is that there's no right or wrong. Everyone decides for themselves. Everyone's opinion is equal. You should say your opinion, and then you get a lot of incivility. What I would like to see is a revamped civics curriculum where we teach very explicitly the long tradition of left-right. We teach what each side is, you can't say right about, that's my language, but you teach what each side is concerned about. You know, very much like the line here, both are essential. One without the other creates an unbalanced American civic order. You need a party of progress or reform and a party of stability and order. That's a paraphrase from John Stuart Mill. So I think that we could teach in our civics classes, we could teach that the other side actually has a piece of the puzzle. Both sides do. We need each other, more of a yin-yang idea. So I think there are indirect ways that we can foster these virtues in young people, which might lead to more practice.
Right. So, I mean, I think we have to talk about virtues like virtues of hospitality.
That's right.
Which also don't even require you to like someone, but it's a virtue of...
That's right. So I think virtue sometimes gets a bad name, especially on the left, because it's so associated with the Christian virtues and Christianity. But I think if we go back to an older Greek notion where the virtues are excellences, arete, the arete or excellence of a person is, well, there are many, to be hospitable, to be kind, to be honorable and honest. There are many virtues of a person. So I do think that virtue ethics is the only philosophical theory that matches human nature. I'd like to see us return to talking about virtues and teaching kids the virtues. I think it would be helpful.
Okay. And do you have children?
Yes.
So I wonder, I'd be curious about how you take this science, what you learn through your science about being human, and how you, you know, how it flows into your daily life, but also in particular, you know, what do you think you would talk to your children about, do with your children that you might not do if you weren't practicing this profession?
I think so. It's been much, much easier to do discipline now that I've read about conservatives. So, you know, because the temptation, my children are 4 and 7 now. And, you know, when they were younger, you know, because the liberal, my wife, I mean, even though I'm a centrist, I'm a moderate, but by personality, I'm straight left. I've got a liberal personality. It's allowed me to talk about, say, for example, being disrespectful. If I was still liberal, I would not have used that as part of raising my children. But now the concept, it's not a big concept in our family, but at least I can talk about being respectful and disrespectful in ways, I mean, about, you know, like adults. Like, that's not the right way to talk to adults. Of course, liberals can do that. But I'm just saying there's a certain conservative vocabulary about order, structure, and respect that's easier for me now.
Anything else that you would like to say in the context of this conversation that feels important in the sweep of your work?
Let's see. One of the first steps to solving these problems is to acknowledge your own limitations. Studying moral psychology has made me somewhat more humble. It's made me realize that my mind is going to jump to conclusions and they're often wrong, and I can't see that at first. What's been found about the way to make an effective apology, and this is just a good way to create any sort of change is start by saying what you're wrong about. And so in any sort of politically charged encounter, don't start off by making your case about what you're right about. Start off by saying, you know, my side has gotten some things wrong. We were wrong about this historically. You guys were right about that. Or start off praising the other side. Start off in that way. Humility, you know, your opponents could use it against you, but humility, acknowledging fault or praising something on the other side. I mean, this is straight out of Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. But start off in that way, and then by the power of reciprocity, they're more inclined to match you. And what you want to avoid at all costs is the normal human interaction of we're combatants throwing arguments at each other for consumption, not by the other person, but by the onlookers. You want to avoid that dynamic. And so the power of apologies and acknowledgments and all the other stuff you need to do to prepare the ground for a conversation, that's, I guess, what I'd most want to leave this group with, given that so many of you are engaged in trying to have these difficult conversations where the odds are against you, but it's not impossible.
Jonathan Haidt has written this: to live virtuously as individuals and societies, we must understand how our minds are built. We must find ways to overcome our natural self-righteousness. We must respect and even learn from those whose morality differs from our own. Jonathan Haidt is a professor of ethical leadership at New York University's Stern School of Business. He's the author of The Happiness Hypothesis: Finding Modern Truth in Ancient Wisdom, and The Righteous Mind: Why Good People Are Divided by Politics and Religion.
Access Sacramento broadcasts great speeches and interviews every Sunday from 6 to 8 p.m., or you can get the podcast at greatspeechesandinterviews.blogspot.com.
The Lars Larson Show.
I blamed everyone, man. I blamed everyone. The Pope, the Father, and Son, man. I blamed everyone. I thought being the president would be more fun. I blamed everyone. I blamed the economy, the policy, those that don't agree with me. GOP, can't you see? This is a catastrophe. Hannity, humanity, this is insanity. Unemployment, no enjoyment. Let me just take a moment to blame more things, not just my opponent. I blamed everyone. I blamed everyone, man, I blamed everyone. Pope, the Father, and Son, man, I blamed everyone. I'm probably gonna blame you too, cause I blamed everyone. I blame Katrina, Irina, the price of gasoline, Guantanamo, the Alamo, not enough oil flow. President of Iran, he is such an angry man. Limbaugh, Uncle Sam, this is gonna be my plan. Every woman, every man, probably even blame this man. I blamed everyone. I blamed everyone, man, I blamed everyone. Pope, the Father, and Son, man, I blamed everyone. I thought being the president would be more fun. I blamed everyone. The price of gas and my past, this is never gonna last. Headaches, earthquakes, it's not my fault for heaven's sakes. Tea party tsunami, European economy, and cult of Glenn Beck, never gonna show respect. Lars Larson's hate speech, they all want me impeached. I blamed everyone. I blamed everyone, man, I blamed everyone. Pope, the Father, and Son, man, I blamed everyone. I'm probably gonna blame you too, cause I blamed everyone. Everyone.
Lars Larson. Larson.
Where do I go? Follow the river. Where do I go? Follow the gulls. Where is the something? Where is the someone that tells me why I live and die? Where do I go? Follow the children. Where do I go? Follow their smiles. Is there an answer?
in their sweet faces that tells me why I live and die. Follow the wind song, follow the thunder, follow the neon in young lovers' eyes. Down to the gutter, up to the glitter, into the city where the truth lies. Where do I go? Follow the children. Where do I go? Follow their smiles. Is there an answer in their sweet faces that tells me why I live and die? Follow the wind song, follow the thunder, follow the neon in young lovers' eyes. Down to the gutter, up to the glitter, into the city where the truth lies. Where do I go? Follow my heartbeat. Where do I go? Follow my hand. Where will they lead me? And will I ever discover why I live and die? I live and die. Why do I live? Why do I die? Tell me, where do I go? Tell me why. Tell me where. Tell me why.
Together, shout it now. There's no one who can doubt it now. So let's tell the world all about it now. Happy days are here again. Your cares and troubles are gone. There'll be no more from now on. Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. So long, sad times. So long, bad times. We are rid of you at last. Howdy, gay times. Cloudy, gray times. You are now a thing of the past.
Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together, shout it now. There's no one who can doubt it now. So let's tell the world about it now. Happy days are here again. Your cares and troubles are gone. There'll be no more from now on. Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again.
That's all, folks.